Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. It was so good, she had to say it twice. Welcome to Web Sleuth Radio. Web Sleuth Radio, me too. And tonight we are discussing true crime, current events, and we always use common sense. And thanks to an anonymous Web Sleuth member, our sponsorship this month is a wonderful organization. I guess she has to say it three times. Okay, there we go. Okay, Kimster, did I just hear myself repeat myself?
No, Tricia, I didn't hear anything, so why don't you just keep talking?
I'll keep talking because I hear what I'm saying like 10 seconds later in my ear, which is really, really weird. Okay, I don't know what's going on, but of course it's Web Sleuth Radio, which means there's always technical problems. So when I hear myself talking, I will totally and completely ignore it. Okay, thanks to an anonymous Web Sleuth member, our sponsorship this month is a wonderful organization called DreamCatchersForAbusedChildren.com, a nonprofit organization where their mission is to educate the public on child abuse symptoms, intervention, and preventions. Visit them at DreamCatchersForAbusedChildren.com. Okay, Kimster, hold on one second. I'm going to try and alleviate this situation I'm having in my headphones because there is no way I can do a show like that. Okay, there we go.
All right.
Think I've got it done now. I think I've got it fixed. Anyway, it is a wonderful organization, and we invite you to be sure and check them out today. That is DreamCatchersForAbusedChildren.com. Now, you know the Kardashians. Everybody's heard of the Kardashians, right? Well, the Kardashians and sociopaths have something in common. They are everywhere, on every TV show. They show up in your lives without you even knowing it, and they are very, very scary. Tonight, our guest is a world-renowned expert on sociopaths, how to spot them, and how to not let them into your life. Donna Anderson is her name, and we'll be speaking with Donna in just a moment. But first, speaking of sociopaths, let's get to the segment called What the Heck Has Casey Anthony Done Now? I was reading the latest National Enquirer, and their headline story was Casey Anthony's Secret Escape to Mexico. It was an interesting article, and I was starting to get deeply into the details when the cashier told me, put that magazine down or buy it. Well, I chose to put it down, so I don't know all the details, but somehow I think Casey Anthony is going to end up in a tropical location long before I ever will, and that is not fair. But here's the thing. Casey is still front page story news. She's still selling papers. Trust me, the Enquirer would not put her on the front page unless she was making them a lot of money. So speaking of stories, what I'd like you to do is this. If you go to the public poll forum on websleuth.com, you'll see that I've put up a poll with the question, do you think Anthony lead prosecutor Jeff Ashton has a right to write a book about the Anthony case more than George and Cindy Anthony? I would like you to vote on this poll. In fact, everyone can vote, even if you are not a Web Sleuth member. You can go in and vote. And then next week, I'll tell you the results, and we'll even send out a press release to let the world know of the results. Again, that is the public poll forum at www.websleuth.com/forums. And the question is, do you think Anthony lead prosecutor Jeff Ashton has a right to write a book about the Anthony case more than George and Cindy Anthony? Okay, our guest tonight can save your life. Trust me. Donna Anderson is the author of Love Fraud, How Marriage to a Sociopath Fulfilled My Spiritual Plan. She is also author of lovefraud.com. That's a website and a blog that teaches people how to recognize and recover from sociopaths. And boy, do we need to recover from these type of people. Donna is working on her next book, which will be released next year, called Red Flags of Love Fraud, 10 Signs You're Dating a Sociopath. And Donna, welcome. Thank you for joining us tonight.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, Donna learned about sociopaths the hard way by marrying one. Her husband had no conscience, no empathy, and lied constantly, which Donna learned far too late, were the cardinal sins, signs of a sociopath, that is. In 2005, Donna launched lovefraud.com to educate the public about this destructive personality disorder. And somebody on Web Sleuth posted this. What's the difference between a sociopath like Osama bin Laden and Casey Anthony? Answer, the lipstick. And I believe that. Donna, I want to ask you one question that is, to me, forefront in the discussion of sociopaths. Because on websleuth.com, we discuss a lot of true crime. And often, our discussions are about sociopaths. How can they do this? They have no conscience. Why can they get away with this? But Donna, not all sociopaths are killers and murderers. There are sociopaths that are very successful, members of Fortune 500, and family members. What makes a sociopath a killer, a serial killer, or a sociopath like alleged sociopath like Casey Anthony kill her child, or a sociopath who can take that energy and use it to obviously be destructive in the business world, but rise up? How does one not become the other?
Well, a sociopath is a range of behaviors, and I like to say that they range from anywhere from sleazy to serial killer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Hollywood has created this image that all sociopaths are deranged serial killers, and that simply isn't true. You know, first of all sociopaths know exactly what they're doing. They are not deranged. And secondly, very few of them actually kill anybody. So it's kind of just like you could say people are intelligent. Well, some people are intelligent about math, and some people are intelligent about reading and writing and literature. So it's just kind of a range. Sociopaths can be very different, you know, somewhere along the continuum, just the way other people can be different in other aspects of a personality. They simply are not all the same. Some sociopaths have a higher anger threshold, I guess you can say, and they tend to lash out. But actually, from the research that we've done, the main distinguishing traits of sociopathy are that they are deceitful and manipulative. We just did some research on lovefraud.com. It's specifically related to romantic partners. And 98% of our responders, and we had like 1,300 of them, rated the sociopaths as deceitful and manipulative. But the rating for like aggression was much lower than that. So plenty of sociopaths are, plenty are violent, but many are not, but they're all deceitful and manipulative.
So that's really the main kind of the main characteristic that draws them all together, is they are manipulative and they lie a lot. But you know, a lot of people are like that. Does that mean they're sociopaths?
No. I mean, yes, you're correct in that they lie a lot and they are manipulative, but sociopathy, along with being a continuum, is also what's called a syndrome. Any clinician who will evaluate somebody is looking at about 20 different characteristics, and they're rating the person on those characteristics. I mean, that's what's done when they evaluate someone as a psychopath, which is very similar to a sociopath. And in fact, you know, that's another whole conversation we can
right.
have as far as, you know, how they're separate and different. So the thing is that the thing that sociopaths really have in common is that they are all social predators. They live their lives by exploiting people. And what they all sociopaths want, power, control, and sex. And that's pretty much it. So what they're lacking is a love motivation. Sociopaths are not capable of feeling love for anybody, including, like, their own children. And so, you know, this combination of, you know, wanting power, control, and sex and having no love makes it that they can do just about anything. And then it just almost becomes a matter of personal preference. I mean, some sociopaths won't kill anybody, you know, just because they don't want the mess, you know, or something along
right.
those lines. So, you know, it's just a matter of how the whole disorder manifests in any particular person.
Well, now you say they don't love their children, but they can certainly act like they love their children. I mean, they can
right.
fake it, right? Talk
yes.
about that
yes.
a little bit.
Well, sociopaths are great actors. And, you know, they can fake it. And that's one of the things that I find, in fact, that's what happened to me. You know, I was married to a sociopath. I mean, my ex-husband was a con man, and he took $250,000 from me. He cheated with six different women during our 2.5-year marriage. He had a child with one of these women. And then 10 days after I left him, he married the mother of the child, which turned out to be the second time he committed bigamy. Now, you know, this is what my ex-husband did to me. He was never violent with me. I did feel threatened kind of one time when he was standing kind of close, but he wasn't violent with me. However, the wife before me died under mysterious circumstances, you know. So I don't know
scary.
Exactly
that's
what happened
scary.
To her. It is scary. And I suspect that he didn't actually physically kill her, but I suspect what happened was that he caused her so much stress and, you know, devastated her financially the same way he devastated me, that she actually gave up her health insurance, and I think she started having heart problems and never went to the doctor. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, because of that, she ended up having essentially a blood clot, which killed her. But it was something that was totally preventable had she gone to a doctor because she still had health insurance.
Right. So basically he did kill her, but in a roundabout way.
Exactly.
Well, how come you didn't know your husband was a con man? I mean, obviously you're a brilliant woman, you know, have it on the ball altogether. Couldn't you recognize off the bat that he was a con man?
No. And the reason is sociopaths, when you first meet them, do not act like jerks. I mean, if this guy had, you know, been rude to me or, like, flirted with other women in front of me or didn't show up when he said he was going to show up, I would have dumped him. But that's not what he did. He portrayed himself to me to be this exciting and successful entrepreneur who was head over heels in love with me. He sent me faxes. He sent me email. He called me all the time. He brought me presents. He promised me the world. And he's very convincing. You know, sociopaths... one of the chief signs that we find, especially when they get involved in a romantic relationship, is that sociopaths are very charming and very charismatic, and they have this magnetism to their personality, and that's exactly what my ex-husband was like when I met him, you know. And even as he started asking me for money, like, early in the relationship, but he never asked for it for himself. It was always an investment in our future together. And I was investing in this business because it would be profitable and we'd make all this money and we'd be living in the lap of luxury. At least that's what he told me. But in reality, nothing he did ever worked. And so, you know, he kept asking for more money and they needed it for this and everything's a crisis and we have to do it right away, you know, before I can think about it. And then, you know, I mean, I would get upset and I would, you know, question him and be angry about, you know, what you said, you're going to pay this back, it's not happening. So then he would cry. He would stand there in front of me and say, you know, I don't want to lose you, I don't want you to hate me, and tears would be rolling down his face. You know, so he put on a very good show. And sociopaths are very good actors, and that's how they get into it.
Is there a test, like, you know, for people out there going into the dating world, can we hand somebody a piece of paper and make them take a test to find out if they're this way? It just scares me listening to you.
Well, I've actually kind of developed something like that, which is what I'm working on for my next book, which is called, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, Red Flags of Love Fraud, How to Know You're Dating a Sociopath. And based on my experience and the experience of love fraud readers, I've put together a list of the different things that I heard time and time again. Because at this point, I have 2,600 cases of people who have been involved with sociopaths.
Mm-hmm.
And I would consistently hear the same stories as far as how they got into these situations. And so I put this list together, and I also tested the 10 signs that I came up with in the survey that we did a few months ago, which is the foundation for the book. And the number one thing that we found is that sociopaths are charming and charismatic. I mean, that's the main thing. Now, they also tend to have this enormous ego, and they tend to be what we call overly attentive. You know, they are showering you with attention. They're calling you all the time. And actually, the word we use for it is love bombing. You know, they're like, you know,
love bombing.
That
now that
love bombing.
I like that. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. It's they're telling you that you're their soulmate. Like, you know, within 5 minutes of meeting you, and that's really not that far off. The other thing that they do is that they blame others for any problem that they have, and sociopaths mm-hmm. typically have many, many situations going on, none of which are ever their fault. And we also said earlier about lying. I mean, that's a big deal because sociopaths will lie about absolutely anything. You know, they'll lie about big things and small things. I mean, I've had some of my readers say that, you know, sociopaths will lie just to stay in practice, and mm-hmm. and they do. they also tend to move very quickly. They want to sweep you off your feet and get you to commit and, you know, get married right away. They also have this thing that we call the pity play, which is that they tend to make you want to feel sorry for them. In fact, Dr. Martha Stout, in her book, which is called The Sociopath Next Door, she talks about this as being the biggest sign that you'll ever see that someone is trying to manipulate you, is that they're trying to get you to feel sorry for them. And the other thing that sociopaths have is intense sexual magnetism. I mean, these people are generally very sexy. A lot of people, my readers have told me that the best sex they ever had was with the sociopaths. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so there's this whole list of things. About the only physical trait that you might see that someone is a sociopath is that they often make intense eye contact, you know, which is sometimes called the predatory stare, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you ever have anyone, you know, who is looking at you and makes you feel like you're the next meal, you should pay attention, because it may very well be true.
Right.
So, you know, we have these 10 signs, and if somebody has one or two, that doesn't mean that they're a sociopath. I mean, for example, anybody who's dating would love to be with someone who's charming and sexy. I mean, who wouldn't mm-hmm. want that? But if you see charming and sexy and lying and pity play and blaming and intense and moving fast, if you see the whole package, then you know that you have to be cautious.
Well, let's talk about the other sociopaths, because like you said, there's a range here. And we'll get back to the, you know, the scary going out on a date with a sociopath in just a minute. But on websleuths.com, like I said, we deal a lot with the sociopath that is violent, that is
right.
a killer.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, this is a range, like a spectrum of behaviors. Some of these sociopaths, you know, when I look at them, I think of, and maybe he's not a sociopath, I'm just assuming he is, but like people like Otis O'Toole, who killed John Walsh's boy. He certainly isn't charming. He had no teeth. He didn't bathe. You know, is that another spectrum? Is it just sometimes the violence just overcomes everything about them?
Well, the key thing about sociopaths, as I said earlier, is that they want power and control, you know,
mm-hmm.
and the degree to which they want power and control can go to the scale of being violent. Now, the thing about sociopaths is they have no conscience. You know, there's two things. They have no conscience and they have no empathy. Sociopaths literally do not feel human connections to other people. I mean, they're just like missing the parts. Emotion doesn't mean anything to them. In fact, you know, they talk about, the researchers talk about how sociopaths can, they interpret emotion as if it's a foreign language, you know, because they really don't understand, they don't feel it. Dr. Robert Hare, who's the guru of psychopaths, he talks about how they understand the words and not the music. You know,
mm-hmm.
they just really don't have the empathy. So if you have someone who has no empathy and no conscience, they can do anything, you know? Yes, and so what happens in a lot of the cases, especially the extreme violence, you know, because although most people think that sociopaths are all serial killers, that isn't true, but a lot of serial killers are sociopaths, so, you
mm-hmm.
know, that's the truth of where the perception comes from. And, you know, the reason is that, you know, they do want the control, and they get excited on the violence, you know. So, I mean, sometimes they find it to be stimulating, you know,
mm-hmm.
it just really turns them on, you know, and this actually happens a lot in domestic abuse cases, you
right.
know, because, you know, they get off on the power of it. And, you know, some domestic violence victims have learned that if the sociopath who's beating up on them, the worst thing that they can do is try and fight it off, you know, because the sociopath becomes even more violent.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's
so
scary.
Oh, it is. Yeah,
oh,
I mean, I've heard from some people who learned that, you know, that the best thing that they could do to make it stop was like not resist at all, and
mm-hmm.
you know, then, you know, because the resistance would get them all excited, and, you know, just it adds to the fire.
Let's talk about how a person becomes a sociopath. I've heard a couple of different things, and let's get to the heart of this. I've heard that people are born with a certain, I don't know if it's a gene or a certain brain part, and something in their life kicks that in and revs it up and gets it going. And so some people are born with this particular part of the brain inactive and are never a sociopath because they don't experience abuse, they don't do whatever. Others, it seems like they're just born that way because they're born into a normal family. What makes a sociopath?
The condition is highly genetic.
It is,
okay.
Really? Now, that's interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is highly genetic. Someone generally must be born with at least a predisposition to become a sociopath. However, because someone has the genes, doesn't necessarily make it a foregone conclusion that they will become a sociopath. There is an interaction between the genetics and the environment that they grow up in. Now, the thing is, if sociopathy is genetic, that generally means that at least one of the parents is a sociopath. Now, sociopaths make terrible parents. So what happens is if a child is born with a genetic predisposition to become a sociopath and then gets bad parenting, you know, because, you know, sociopaths don't care about their children, you know, they look mm-hmm. at children as a possession, you know, an object like their flat screen TV or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these kids get a double whammy. They get the genes and then they get the bad parenting. And so that they can, you know, some kids have no chance at all. You know, they've just got dealt a bad hand. You know, they were born this way, and then they get the bad parenting. Now, of course, genetics is a crapshoot, as you mentioned before, and it's quite possible that two people who are not sociopaths have a child who, you know, picked up the gene from somewhere in the family tree. And what happens is that, you know, sometimes what they call the genetic insult, which means the strength of the genes, is so strong that even if they get good parenting, they still turn out bad, you know. Mm-hmm. So there is an interaction, but often what happens, like especially in the cases that I hear about on Love Fraud, because you know, I have a lot of people who contact us who realize that, you know, they have gotten involved with a sociopath, and they don't realize it right away. They realize it, you know, down the line, and they realize that they've got children with this person. So now, you know, the issue is, how do you raise a child not to become a sociopath? And it may be possible. I know that my colleague on Love Fraud is in this situation. I mean, she is mm-hmm. a psychiatrist and realized that she had a child with a sociopath. So she is raising this child to not go down that road, and so far she's been successful. But what you have to do is essentially teach a child to value love. The problem is with a sociopath is that they're born without the innate ability to love that most people are born with. So you have to teach this to the child. You have to teach it to the child to learn to value their mothers and their fathers, and to learn to value human companionship. And the best time to do this is when they're an infant. But, you know, you may not have figured it out when they're an infant. So, you know, sometimes it may be even a little bit too late if you start, like, when they're children. Generally what happens is that if a child has gotten the genes for a sociopath, you'll start to see behaviors possibly as early as 2 and 3 and 4 years old.
Well, what can a two-year-old do that makes you, that causes a red flag?
They are fearless.
Mm-hmm.
They have no fear. You know, they'll you know, chase the dog. They'll run into the street. You know, and nothing scares them. You know, so that, you know, that's what you'll see at that age. They also do not have this real need to be with their mother. They tend to be very independent. You know, they're not distressed when they're away from their mother or away mm-hmm. from their father or whatever. You know, so you see this lack of fear and a lack of connection. Later on, you know, by the time they can talk, I mean, some of them actually start lying and manipulating at that
right.
age. Now, that doesn't happen all the time because also what happens is sometimes kids are wonderful up until they get to puberty, and then, you know, those hormones kick in, and it activates the dominance system in the person, because that's essentially what sociopathy is. It's an overactive desire for dominance. And, you know, once, like, testosterone kicks in and those other hormones at puberty, that can activate the whole thing. So some people, you don't see any signs until maybe they're, you know, 14, 15 years old or something like that.
Interesting. You said it was genetic, that you had to be born mm-hmm. with a specific gene. Isn't there a way, perhaps at birth, to test for this gene, and that way the parents can be made aware of it? Maybe there's a way to even manipulate the gene so it doesn't, so it becomes inactive. Am I talking science fiction here, or what?
In all honesty, I'm not sure the answer to that question. I do know that it's been fairly recent that the field has settled on the idea that it is highly genetic, and apparently they have figured out a couple of genes that may be the ones that are involved in this. But, I mean, this is within the past couple of years, so I imagine there are folks... Yes, I imagine there are folks who are hoping that what you're suggesting is possible, but we're not there yet.
Right. Well, I'm sure it will be possible, and that's going to be a big ethical question, too. If you test for the gene, what happens? You know, can you test for it early? If you can you fix it? Or do you have a child born with this gene? I mean, it's going to be a lot of ethical questions coming our way and our children's way in the years to come, but that's a whole other show as well. I'd like to bring in Kimster. I've elevated her to executive producer as well as co-host on Web Sleuth Radio. Big pay raise there. Hey, Kimster, you have read the Jackie Waller affidavit, and this is a woman who, she was married to a sociopath, correct?
I would say so. I'm not the expert, though. We probably should ask Donna, but from what I'm reading, it sounds classic.
Give us a quick rundown of Jackie Waller and her case briefly, and then we'll let Donna Anderson comment on it.
Well, Jackie Waller is a woman that she's passed away, so I'm going to say I'm sure she has. She had three children, and they were triplets. And she was going through a divorce. I can't remember if she was exactly divorced yet or not. It's been a while since I read the first part of the case. But she was going through a divorce. And during their relationship, he threatened her many times, threatened to kill her, threatened to kill her kids, told her things like that he had robbed a bank, that he had possibly killed someone else, that he was going to take one of the kids and take off to California. I mean, just all kinds of threats and everything, and of which she logged and is now in an affidavit. That's the rundown. I don't know what else you want me to talk about on that. But
well, I just,
that's basically the rundown. I mean, there was one other part. I'm sorry. After she went missing, he began to then threaten her sister and the children even after that. And
well,
it sounds
to
me like major control.
What happened to her?
Well,
Jackie?
They're still looking for her at this point.
She's
yeah.
missing. She's basically she's missing,
right.
And it's obvious
right.
that he had something to do with it because she kept track of all the threats and stuff. Does this sound
right.
like?
Well, there's also blood. They found blood and things like that. So yeah.
Right.
So it's definitely sure that he did it, but we don't know where she is yet.
Right, and unfortunately, that's an all too common occurrence. And Donna, we're talking with Donna Anderson, author and incredible expert. Lovefraud.com is her website. Donna, you had a chance to look over this affidavit, I hope, for a few moments. Is this just classic what you see with a sociopath married to somebody who is losing control and the woman finally realizes she's married to this guy and this is what happens? Is this your classic case?
It seems to be. I mean, I wouldn't want to make a diagnosis because actually I'm not a mental health professional, but I did have a chance to look at it, and you know, with all the threats that he made towards his wife, towards Jackie, essentially what he kept saying to her was that, you know, if they weren't going to be taking care of the children together, then he was not going to allow any other man to have any involvement in the lives of his children. It's a classic case of wanting to maintain control over this woman, you know, because that's what it was all about. It's like, you know, he had gotten into this situation essentially because he wanted somebody to control, and she was breaking away. And in fact, you know, domestic violence experts will tell you that the most dangerous time for any woman who's involved with an abuser is when she makes a break. You know, because then they're infuriated. You know, they're losing control, and this is not what they want at all. And it was kind of interesting because I did have a chance to look at that case, and the last page of what you sent me was part of Jackie's notes that she had been keeping. And in the very last page, she seemed to be asking herself some questions about, you know, her own role in this relationship. Was like, you know, she asked herself, do you love Clay? That was the guy's name. And mm-hmm. She also asked herself, well, what do you have in common? What do you like about him? And the answers that she gave were very typical of women who, and also men actually, but who are involved in these abusive relationships. In other words, you know, even though he was being abusive and threatening her and, you know, talking about how he's going to kill their kids, she's still saying that she cares about him and wants him to be a good father and wants him to be, you know, to succeed in life. And she still has all these thoughts. Now, mm-hmm. essentially what's going on here is that relationships with sociopaths are highly addictive, and so she is essentially addicted to the relationship. You know, she has formed this love bond with him, you know, which happened very early. You know, I'm sure in the very beginning of their relationship, he was wonderful. He's, you know, giving her flowers and telling her how wonderful she is and promising her the world and all those sweet things that all these sociopaths tend to do. And what happens is that you form a love bond with that person based upon that early experience. And then what happens is that the love bond is reinforced, you know, especially when you're intimate with somebody. It actually changes your brain. It changes your brain chemistry when you're
really
actually,
really, that's yes, interesting.
Yes. And, well, actually, all love does. You know, anytime you become in love with somebody, you know, it's part of nature's way of keeping people together for the survival of the species. In other words, you know, nature knows that our babies are helpless when they're born, so they want the parents to stay together. So there's some hormones, essentially. There's one called oxytocin that is released in the brain during love and sex, which makes you feel more trusting of the person that you're with.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, what happens is, you know, in any relationship, you develop a psychological love bond with the person that you're with, and this bond keeps getting reinforced. Now, even though the guy, Clay, does not, I mean, sociopaths do not form bonds the way regular people do. Well, he may not be doing it, but she is. So,
right.
You know, she thinks she's in a real relationship with somebody who loves her, so she's forming this bond. And then what happens is that he probably does something, I mean, far beyond it got to the point of threatening murder, but he would do something that, like, would threaten the relationship and you know, cause, like, maybe he would just, you know, say, well, threatening, he's got it, well, you know, you didn't call me fast enough, so I'm breaking up with you, or who knows, you
mm-hmm.
know, what may have gone on. But a very strange thing happens is that if somebody, like, makes a threat to the integrity of the relationship, it creates fear and anxiety in the other person. This would mm-hmm. be in this woman, Jackie. That has the perverse effect of actually strengthening the love bond. You know, because
really?
You feel like you're losing it, and so you know, it actually starts to get stronger. And then what happens is that she would, you know, try and get him to reconcile, and then suppose they do, so she feels this relief. And then they probably have sex, you know, make-up sex or something like that. So the bond keeps getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And so that's exactly why a lot of people in domestic violence situations find it so hard to get away, is because they keep having this cycle going around and around and around. You know, I mean, they talk about how, you know, there's a build-up, and then there's an incident, and then there's reconciliation, and then, you know, there's calm for a while until the cycle goes around again. Well, each time that happens, the bond gets strengthened and it becomes tighter and tighter. So it eventually gets to the point where the people feel so entwined that they can't leave. And that's
mm-hmm.
exactly what this woman was experiencing. You know, she's still feeling all these, you know, warm thought feelings for him, and it's because of the addiction. I mean, the love actually becomes an addiction, and love with sociopaths, you know, because they create this anxiety and fear, actually becomes a very strong addiction.
I have a couple of questions from the chat room. First of all, are sociopaths also narcissists? Is that just kind of go hand in hand?
Yes. Actually, all sociopaths are narcissists, but not all narcissists are sociopaths.
Right.
And
right.
The difference essentially is the degree to which they are malevolent to other people. In other words, mm-hmm. narcissists, you know, are very self-centered, and they just tend to be clueless with other people. You know, they want what they want, and if somebody else gets hurt, oh, well, I guess, you know, that happened. Whereas a sociopath wants what they want, plus they want power and control over somebody else. So they tend to be, you know, more forward in how they are willing to inflict damage upon other people.
Can drugs cause sociopathic behavior, a drug abuser, or can it bring it out, or is it just already there and the drugs just may add to it?
Yeah, actually, sociopathy and addiction are very related to each other genetically.
Really?
So,
why is that?
I can't answer that question. I mean, that's what I learned from my colleague, the psychiatrist, and I haven't quite figured out the ins and outs of it. But addiction, ADHD, and sociopathy are all genetically related. And, yeah, it's pretty wild. I guess I better learn the answer to that question, but at the moment
wow,
I don't have it.
That's just, that is wild. Well, it's good. It's good that that this is coming out now, because the more we learn, the more we can stop it from ever getting into somebody's life again. That's the good thing about this knowledge.
Right.
But like I said,
right,
it's going to cause all kinds of ethical questions as we keep moving on. Okay, let's talk about something. How big is this problem? It just seems like now, lately, this is all we hear about are sociopaths, and you hear people. But let me back up. I want to ask one question first. We keep talking about men being sociopaths. How about women? How about women being a sociopath and marrying a poor guy, some poor guy who does everything he can to please her? Tell us a different dynamic there, and then we'll get to the other question.
Well, first of all, there absolutely are female sociopaths. And a lot of the research so far seems to indicate that there are more males than females, but there certainly are females. Some of the research shows that one set of statistics, and there's lots of set of statistics, but one of them suggests that 1% of the population of women are sociopaths, whereas 3% of the population of men are sociopaths. So that's like there's like three times as many males sociopaths as there are females. However, there's another condition called borderline personality disorder,
have I had experience with that. Oh, that's a scary thing.
Yes, exactly. Now, borderline personality disorder is usually the people who are diagnosed with borderline personality disorder are 75% women.
Mm-hmm.
However, a lot of people or a lot of experts are now coming to think that the women who are being diagnosed or some of the women who are being diagnosed with borderline personality disorder are, in fact, sociopaths. So yes. And, you know, it's just that it does manifest in different ways between men and women. The main difference is the level of violence. And a big reason is simply, you know, the physical differences between men and women. Women are generally not in a position to be as violent as men are. I mean, some are violent for sure. I mean, I have certainly heard of attacks, you know, with women throwing things and attacking and punching people and things like that. I have certainly heard that. But the fact is that most women are, you know, not as physically strong or as big as men. So they tend, you know, not to be as physically violent. But they are certainly as deceitful and as manipulative as the males are. So, yes, there are absolutely are females. There are absolutely females who inflict domestic violence. There are females who inflict child abuse. And, you know, these people are probably sociopaths.
Exactly. You know, I'd love to do a series on borderline personality disorder, because anybody that's dealt with a borderline has battle scars. And I swear, you put a borderline personality person in a room, and within 5 minutes, everything is in an uproar. And I don't. You're right. It does seem a lot like sociopathic behavior. And that's interesting that maybe borderlines are really women. Borderline women are really sociopaths, kind of in disguise almost. Let's go to my executive producer, co-host, Kimster. She has a question from the chat room.
Well, first of all, I just want to say, Donna, that this conversation is extremely enlightening, and it's helping me in a personal way. And from the comments I'm seeing in the chat room, you're helping people there as well, and I thank you. Tricia asked you the question about the difference between a sociopath and narcissism. I also have a question from the chat room from Crackerjacks, who wants to know what the difference between a sociopath and a psychopath would be.
okay? Essentially, it depends who you ask. Now, what has happened is that the mental health field has not agreed upon what to call people with this disorder and how to diagnose it. And, you know, this essentially is a bunch of academics who are arguing with each other as far as, you know, what it should actually be called and, you know, what it should be done. In fact, like, there's roughly two camps. There are the people who are the research psychologists who prefer the term psychopath, and they essentially like this term because it was the one used by the man who first developed or first described in detail what this disorder was all about. His name was Hervey Cleckley, and he wrote back in the 1940s and 50s and was really the first one to outline what this whole personality disorder is about. So all the research people use the term psychopath, and they've developed something called the Psychopathy Checklist Revised, which was developed by a man by the name of Dr. Robert Hare. And it's a tool, an instrument for people to diagnose what a psychopath is. Now, this instrument is extremely accurate, and the tool was developed originally to assess whether or not somebody who was in prison would recidivate, would, you know, commit crime again once they get out. And there's been hundreds and hundreds of studies, you know, based on this instrument, and they found it to be very good at predicting, you know, recidivism and very good at predicting other aspects of the disorder. So that's one whole side. Then there's the psychiatrists and the people who tend to be clinicians, and they use a manual called the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association. And this lists all the different disorders, and it is important because apparently, you know, insurance companies pay for treatment based on the codes and the disorders and things like this. So this is pretty important. Well, they don't even use the term psychopath in that book. You know, they call it antisocial personality disorder. I mean, back in the 50s or 60s, it used to be called sociopathy. Then they changed it to antisocial personality disorder. So essentially, that's the whole disagreement between people. And there are people who will say that a sociopath is one level and a psychopath is the higher form of a sociopath. And there are people who will say that a psychopath describes personality traits and a sociopath describes behavior. And there are some people who see it as a nature versus nurture issue in that psychopaths are born and sociopaths are raised. So essentially, it's the same thing, and, you know, there are people who are splitting hairs to decide, you know, which term to use. But it's essentially the same disorder. And from the point of view of any victim, it doesn't matter. You know, these are all people who have no conscience and live their lives by exploiting others.
We're talking with Donna Anderson. Donna is the author of Love Fraud, How Marriage to a Sociopath Fulfilled My Spiritual Plan. Donna has a fantastic website that you will get lost in. It is so interesting, and that's lovefraud.com. Okay, let's get back to an earlier question. How big a problem is this? How big is this problem just here in the U.S.? Let's not talk about it in the world. Just here in the U.S. Is this like a huge, almost epidemic, or is it not?
I would say yes. Back to our two different terms, Dr. Robert Hare estimates that 1% of the population meets his definition of a psychopath, which tends to be a bit more stringent than the definition of a sociopath. The mental health professionals estimate that 4% of the population are sociopaths. So we've got this range of 1% to 4%. Well, that means that there are 3 to 12 million sociopaths in the United States.
Yikes. Yes. Okay.
Now, the other thing you need to know... This is bad. This is, like, really bad. The other thing that you need to know is that most of them are not in jail, okay? You know, there are 2 million people in jail. Well, Dr. Hare assumes that 25% of them are psychopaths. So that means the rest are, you know, on the loose. All these other people are on the loose. And to make it even, you know, more discouraging, sociopaths are found in all walks of life. You know, there is no social group or social section of society that is free of sociopaths. They are men, they are women, they are rich and poor, they are old and young, they live in all communities, work in all professions, and, you know, they are just absolutely everywhere. So, I mean, that's why it's so important to be familiar with the behavior and to get an idea of what the warning signs are, because they could be anywhere.
That is very frightening when you think about it. And you're right. People need to be aware of the warning signs. I'm embarrassed to admit, but one of the first times I really started to learn about sociopaths was through the Sopranos TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Finding out that, you know, a lot of people here have watched The Sopranos, finding out Tony is a sociopath and finding out that his therapist realized that therapy was only helping him become a better sociopath, to learn how...
Well, you know,
how...
it's interesting, because I wrote a blog piece about that. I don't mm-hmm. agree that Tony Soprano was a sociopath,
mm-hmm.
and for a couple of reasons. First of all, a sociopath will never go to therapy on his own. You know, sociopaths...
Really?
Oh, no. Sociopaths do not feel any distress at their condition. They don't
mm-hmm.
think there's anything wrong with them. You know, their view of the world is that there are predators and there are prey. They are the predators and everybody else is prey. So, you know, a sociopath does not feel there's anything wrong with them. So they're never going to go to therapy. So that was one thing. Secondly, I mean, you did see instances in the show where Tony Soprano cared. He cared about
yes.
his family. He cared about his kids. A sociopath is not like that, you know. So,
they can't, but can they fake it? Can they fake it?
They can fake it, sure. But, I mean...
Eventually it comes out. Eventually the real self comes out, right?
Exactly. So, I mean, I didn't watch all the episodes, but I think
mm-hmm.
it was fairly consistent that Tony Soprano did seem to care about his family, you know, and some of the other people. I mean, you could correct me if I'm wrong on that.
No,
but
he did. He absolutely
yeah.
did. And,
okay.
And I'm embarrassed to say that's where I started learning about it.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
but
the other point you made... is true, is that, you know, the only time sociopaths tend to go to therapy is when they are court-ordered, you know, because
mm-hmm.
they have anger management, you know, or something like that. And that is what happens. I mean, often they go to therapy and they learn new tricks. You know, they learn new psychobabble to lay on people as far
mm-hmm.
as, you know, trying to explain away what their problem is, because they have no problem, you know. But
right.
at least in their mind, they have no problem. But, you know, now they have all these words to explain why they have no problem, or
mm-hmm.
that it's somebody else's fault, and or they blame it on their abusive childhood, which may or may not have existed, or whatever. But there actually is research to indicate that putting a sociopath in therapy makes them worse.
Right, and that's what they talked about on The Sopranos. So
mm-hmm.
obviously the writers did a little bit of their homework there. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's talk about some warning signs here. A large percentage of the people on Web Sleuths are women, but we do have men. Let's talk about men and women, the combined warning signs. Maybe they're separate warning signs for each sex. Why don't you go ahead? Again, we're talking with Donna Anderson, expert on sociopathic behavior. lovefraud.com is her website. Donna, go ahead, give us the warning, make us protect ourselves from these crazy people.
Well, first of all, they are the same. The warning signs, I have not noticed any significant differences, you know, between
mm-hmm.
how the men are and how the women are. So the number one thing is that they are charismatic and charming. You know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like they can be so sweet and so wonderful and just really know what to say. They're never at a loss for words. They always have an answer. And, you know, so something's just rolling off their tongue, which is so wonderful that it's just amazing. So, I mean, that is the biggest sign that we've seen. And actually, the second biggest sign that we found was that they tend to blame others for whatever problem they may have. You know, nothing
mm-hmm.
is ever their fault. You know,
right.
Especially if someone has, you know, is far enough along in life, you know, in their 30s or 40s or even 50s, that they've been in relationships before. Well, everything is the ex's fault. You know, it's like they will blame whatever, their legal problems, their financial problems. It's always blamed on the ex.
Mm-hmm.
A big thing is the love bombing. You know, when they fix their sights on somebody or they size you up as a potential target, they are over the top with attention. You know, they're telling you, I mean, their favorite word is soulmate. You know, it's like as soon as they feeling like they have a live one on the hook, so to speak, they'll start saying that you're their soulmate, and they're talking about, you know, the future you're going to have together and everything like that. So that's an important
mm-hmm.
one.
Okay.
They lie. All sociopaths lie. You know, sociopaths lie like they breathe. They make up big lies. They make up little lies. I mean, it's amazing. And some of them, some of them are, obviously smarter than others. There are, you know, some sociopaths that are not so smart, and they tend to be the ones who get caught. But the ones who are really smart can sometimes maintain this incredibly complex catalog in their brains of what lies they told to who, you know?
So they really can remember. They can remember.
Some can. Yeah, it depends how smart they are. You know, some people, you know, I mean, like my ex-husband used to do, and a lot of them do, is that they're very good at mixing lies and truth, you know, so that there is some truth to what they're saying, and, you know, then so that the rest of it sounds plausible. And, you know, it's very difficult to figure out, you know, where the truth starts and the lie ends. It's just very difficult. Again, they tend to, like, move very fast. You know, they want to, you know, get you to commit, like, immediately. In fact, my ex-husband proposed to me within a week of when I met him. And, you know, but the thing is, you know, like, I had actually met him online. And I should say that online dating is extremely, extremely dangerous. You know, there are so many, I mean, of all the people in our survey, the majority of the most, I think we had 23 or 24% of them met the sociopaths that they were involved with online.
Oh,
and,
man.
Oh, yeah. Online is bad, you know, because what happens is you can, you know, create whatever persona you want online.
Sure.
And how would you know? And the other thing that happens, and this is actually very important, is that experts in human communication have figured out that most human communication is like 65 to 90% nonverbal. It has to do with tone of voice and appearance and body language and things like that. Well, when you're communicating online, 65 to 90% of the information is missing. You know, you're not getting any of those cues. So what happens is that we fill in the blanks with our imaginations. And we make the other person to be what we want them to be. So consequently, when you fall in love with somebody online, you are falling in love with your own fantasy.
Oh boy, you know, I was kind of a hermit before. I think I'm done. I'm in for good now. I'm just not going to risk it.
Yeah,
oh,
you know. Well, yeah, it is pretty scary. But anyhow, yeah, there are ways to protect yourself. And the first thing is to know that evil exists. You know, these people are out there, you know. I mean, we have this, like, myth in our culture that, you know, there's good in everybody. Well, unfortunately, it's not true. I mean, there are people in the world who are rotten to the core, and they're the sociopaths. So the first thing is we need to know that evil exists. The second thing is we need to know the warning signs. And, you know, I've gone through a bunch of them. You can go to lovefraud.com, and, you know, there's a page on lovefraud.com. It's Are You Dating a Sociopath? And it goes right through the 10 signs. The third thing is that we need to trust our intuition. Our intuition will usually tell us when there's a problem, you know, when somebody is dangerous, when we should not get involved with somebody. In fact, you know, one of the questions on my love fraud survey was, you know, early in the relationship, did you have a gut feeling or intuition that there was something wrong, that there was something wrong with the person or the relationship? 71% of the respondents said yes.
Wow. And they still continued on.
And they still continued. 40% said they just ignored it, you know, and then I have all these other percentages of, you know, why people, you know, they didn't trust their own judgment, you know, they wanted to give somebody a chance, they don't want to be judgmental, whatever their reasons, but 71% said that, you know, they had an intuition that there was something wrong and ignored it.
Donna, we're talking with Donna Anderson, lovefraud.com, an expert, unfortunately, because she was married to a sociopath, an expert on sociopaths, and we have a question from our chat room. Kimster, what is our question, my dear?
This question comes from Zippity Doodah. I love that name. Her question is, what are the simple talking points to other family members who refuse to see the BPD sociopath in the mix? They cover for them with well-meaning excuses. What advice do you have for her?
That is such a difficult issue. I mean, I really do wish that it was easy to explain. But what tends to happen is that a lot of people don't want to see what the issue is. I mean, I hear from totally torn up people all the time whose, like, children, like their adult children, are involved with sociopaths, or even, you know, people who are adults and their parents are involved with sociopaths, and they're trying to get the person out of the clutches of this con artist. And it is so difficult, you know, because of the love bonding that forms, you know, which I talked about earlier, and how strong these bonds are and everything. So, and even a lot of people who have been through it, I know I hear from readers all the time, you know, who try and get their own family members to understand what they've gone through, and the family members just don't get it, you know. So essentially what we're finding is that so far, you know, because there is so little discussion of this disorder, people simply can't recognize it. They don't have the empirical knowledge in their brain that this disorder exists and what the symptoms are. So consequently, they just find it hard to understand, you know, what's going on until they experience it themselves. And then it's too late, you know. I mean, most people who come to Love Fraud only come because they're in a situation, you know. They're trying to figure out what's going on with this person they're involved with, or whatever their situation may be. So there is no easy answer. I mean, what I'm hoping to do is continue to spread the word that these people are out there and these are the warning signs. And so hopefully that with this information, people may begin to see it around them. But, you know, until there's a general awareness of this condition, it's very, very difficult to explain to people, you know, what's going on. And people just don't want to hear it. They want to believe that there's good in everybody.
Exactly. Donna, you were married to a sociopath, and you've written a book about it. Just briefly tell us, what is your life now? Is he totally out of your life? Or are you still having repercussions? What's going on?
Oh, no, he's gone. He's way gone. In fact, I mean, I was one of the lucky ones who was able to expose him, like, quite publicly, as a matter of fact, and which gives my book a very nice ending. But I, the main thing is that I have recovered. I have remarried. My husband now is just absolutely wonderful. In fact, he's my partner in getting this information out. He's the one who enabled me to launch Love Fraud and write my book. And so his name is Terry Kelly, and, you know, we're very happy and we're very in love.
Does he have a brother? Because I want to date someone that isn't a sociopath. So we'll talk off the air. Anyway,
yeah,
okay,
really.
Go ahead.
But I mean, that is the good news, is that an experience with a sociopath is absolutely devastating. I mean, I was crushed. I mean, I had been rolled over by a steamroller. I mean, I was a mouse and he was an eagle. I had no chance to, you know, even fight or escape or anything like that. But you can recover. And what happens is that, I mean, as much as I hate to admit it, you know, because of the heartbreak that I went through, it actually broke down my walls, my emotional walls, so that, you know, when I was able to heal, I was also able to love more fully, you know, which is what I can do with my husband now. So, I mean, it is possible to recover, and generally what happens is that, you know, once you're through this situation, you find that you have a lot more wisdom and that you're able to evaluate situations better. So, I mean, people aren't, like, done for life after a situation like this. It is possible to recover.
Donna, we're just getting ready to wrap up here. What final piece of advice can you give our listeners and our members and readers of WebSleuths.com on how, number one, how to avoid a sociopath, and number two, if they are involved in a sociopath, how to get out of it?
If you are not involved with a sociopath, make sure to make yourself aware of what the symptoms are and listen to your intuition. As I said, your intuition will tell you that you are involved. If you are already involved with a sociopath, understand that the person will not change. There is no therapy for a sociopath, and so you need to get out of the relationship. I mean, that is the only solution. And the way you do that is by establishing what we call no contact. You tell the person it's over, you get out, and then you never talk to them again.
Well, that can be scary, though, because, they, like you said, they can get violent. But there are lots of organizations set up to help women and men to get out of violent relationships. And I would also,
but many people are not in violent situations.
Right. Oh, I can't see what you're saying. Right. Just you got to have the no con. You just got to cut it off. You got. Sounds like you just got to accept it, and don't take any of the baloney that they'll try and throw at you and try and get to your heart. Except that this person is a damaged, unfortunately as it is a damaged person. Another way you can help yourself to avoid becoming involved with a sociopath or learn how to deal and get away from one is to go to Donna's website. It's lovefraud.com. Donna Anderson, thank you so much, Juan, again, because we have so many questions. And it is a huge, like you said, epidemic, because I'm telling you, everybody on websleuths.com seems to have a story about how a sociopath weaseled their way into their lives, and we need that information. Donna, thank you so very, very much. I really appreciate it. Oh, one more question. We do have one more question. Kimster, let's wrap it up with your question, my dear. Go ahead.
Oh, I asked that question, but
I did
have another comment.
Okay,
I do have another comment that just came through the chat room.
Okay.
Zippity Doodah said, please tell Miss Anderson that she spent over an hour on the site yesterday, and she feels it's very informative. And Donna, I'm going to spend an hour right after this show. Thank you very, very much for coming on. You have really enlightened us.
It's lovefraud.com.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Donna. Lovefraud.com, and we'll have Donna Anderson on again very, very, very soon. Okay, wow, that was an intense and very interesting show, and I do think, Kimster, you'll agree that we could go on for another 3 hours because there's all kinds of people we could talk about that sound like they're sociopaths. You know, we certainly can't diagnose them, but, you know, people like Patsy Ramsey, you got to wonder. You know, and a lot of people that we deal with, Casey Anthony, and a lot of the high-profile crimes that we deal with on websleuths.com, it appears to be the people involved have, at the very least, some tendencies that are associated with sociopathic behavior. Okay, Kyron Horman, you remember that sweet little boy went missing? He was last seen by his stepmother going into his classroom. Well, his 9th birthday was Friday, and they have been searching for Kyron Horman all weekend with no luck. Now, that little guy needs to come home. I'd like everybody to join websleuths.com for the discussion in the Kyron Horman Forum. And, Kimster, we had some pictures of the search this weekend put up, didn't we? Why don't you tell us about that?
Yes, we do. We are so blessed on websleuths.com to have such excellent locals in the Kyron Horman case. We've got quite a few in there. And they help us with maps and locations. And we have one that I'm going to mention tonight, and that's Free Falls, who, when their searches will go out, and with permission from the searcher, she takes pictures and posts them for us on the Internet. And I've seen comments that there are people all over the Internet that actually refer to her pictures. So be sure to check them out. She didn't take any today because it was extremely hot up there today, but she did take some great ones from yesterday. It gives you an idea of what they're dealing with. The terrain is just horrendous there. And please keep your thoughts and prayers on Kyron that he may be found and come home soon.
Thank you, Kimster. Thank you so much. Well, today, as we all know, we've all been thinking about it today, and that is 10 years. It's been 10 years. Can you believe it? We all remember where we were when those planes crashed into the Twin Towers, into the Pentagon, and into that field in Pennsylvania. We all knew people who were killed. My dear friend's sister was on one of the top floors of the second tower hit. The last thing they heard from her was a voice message saying she was fine, don't worry about her. She knew the other tower had been hit, and she was heading out of the second tower to safety. Never found her, never found a trace of her, totally gone. So many devastating stories like that from all over the world. Well, that morning 10 years ago, I watched the second plane hit the tower live with my 5-year-old son. I didn't know what was going on when I turned the TV on, and so it was too late to stop him from seeing it before I realized what it was. He had already seen it. Now, later in the day, when I explained to him as best I could what had actually happened and what he saw, he noticed how upset I was. So he ran into his room. He got this huge piece of paper, just huge, and started to draw and paint like crazy. And he drew two huge big towers with planes flying into them, but at the last minute, both towers leaned away and the planes missed the towers. He said he was going to grow up and learn how to build buildings just like this one, just like the one he drew, so the terrorists couldn't hurt us again. Years later, I found out that thousands of small kids, just like my son, drew pictures showing everyone being saved in different type of situations. This helped little kids deal with this dreadful reality if they could pretend that everybody was saved. Now, at first, I was really worried that the little kids who were barely old enough to understand 9/11 would be damaged somehow, not to mention the poor kids who lost their loved ones. But somehow, as the saying goes, kids are stronger than we think. So on this day, as we remember those who were murdered, let's also remember that even though it is tragic that our kids have to grow up under the threat of terrorism, they will grow up and become adults. The good thing is they will not be caught off guard like we were. They will be smarter, they will be stronger, and our children, with their knowledge, will be safer. And that pretty much wraps it up for Web Sleuths Radio. We have a wonderful sponsor this month, and that is DreamCatchersForAbusedChildren.com, a nonprofit organization where their mission is to educate the public on child abuse symptoms, interventions, and preventions. Please visit them at DreamCatchersForAbusedChildren.com. And next week, our guest will be, I don't know, but I do know actually, but I can't tell you because I'm not sure if I can get them yet, and I don't want to get your hopes up, but I promise you it will be very, 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 very interesting. And that's it for Web Sleuths Radio. The opinions expressed are our own. They're not connected to WebSleuths.com LLC, which is a separate corporate entity, and if you didn't like it, oh well, get over it, get a job, grow up, and get a life. It's our own opinions. Thank you, everybody. Go out and be safe. And we'll see you here next week, same time, same place. It's Web Sleuths Radio, where we discuss true crime, current events, all the time, using common sense. Good night.